the tagline is ridiculous. The name of the movie is in the tagline, but there's no way you would ever. I've never heard of this movie before. What's up? This is Movies On Up. Meet the crabby crustacean from a faraway world that has clawed his way to the top of Tinseltown. The Lobster Man from Mars. The crabby crustacean seated across from me is the same guy who was always right over there. It is Mr. Dave Becella.
Crabby and crusty like always.
It's Mr. Dave. I am Ryan. We are Movies On Up. Meet the crabby crustacean, blah, blah, blah. That's the tagline. The movie it's from is The Lobster Man from Mars. It was right there in the tagline. So if you guessed that and you sent it to us in one of the following ways, email moviesonup@gmail.com, Facebook, facebook.com/moviesonup, or @moviesonup on the Twitter. If you were correct in realizing that that was from the classic 1989 horror comedy, The Lobster Man from Mars, a prize package will swim its way.
I just hated ideas like that because, like, they probably don't have lobsters in Mars. There is life. It's not like they have lobsters and hermit crabs and stuff. Like,
I don't think they have liquid water.
They did at one point.
That had to be a really old lobster man that was in transit for a long time.
But, like, this idea of an alien coming from another planet that just is like a humanized...
A creature that we have here.
Yeah, I don't like that. Think better.
Think better, Bob Greenford and Stanley Schiff. And somebody else whose name is not showing on IMDb, but they're probably fine with the fact that I don't know who was the third writer for The Lobster Man from Mars. We've got two writers for our movie this week, and that is The Lobster from 2016, directed by Yorgos Lanthimos, and I'm probably horribly mispronouncing his name. The Gyros, as we're familiar with, that's not Gyros.
Gyros?
Gyro. I think that's how that's pronounced. So I have no idea. This guy, I know I'm not getting his name. And he's got the easier name of the two writers to pronounce. The other fella, Ifthimis Philippou? I don't know. Two writers. They're both Greek guys, if you can believe that. Kind of a writing team, a duo, if you will. And they wrote The Lobster for Colin Farrell, Rachel Weisz, Ben Winshaw, and John C. Reilly, which opened on just four screens. May 13th of 2016, and it grossed $190,000, which was good for 23rd place at the box office that week. Your top five were Captain America Civil War, The Jungle Book, Money Monster, The Darkness, and Mother's Day. The Lobster, however, had a $47,500 average per screen, which was the best mark that week. So suck it, Captain America. It did gross just over $9 million domestically, which is pretty impressive when you consider that it started at just $200,000, which puts The Lobster at number 4,801 on the all-time domestic list. It is once, and I'm not even going to make you guess because you're not going to get it. I don't know the movies well enough to give you a clue. So it is one spot above 1982's Trial of the Pink Panther, and one spot below another movie from 1982, A Midsummer Night's Sex Comedy. Robert Redford's Farewell, The Old Man and the Gun, with about $9.1 million, sits in 4,782nd place all time. And Henry Winter's 1986 propaganda film Space Camp sits in 4,717th place all time with $9.6 million. When sitting down to do The Lobster, Lanthimos' The Favorite comes out this week. That's why we're doing it. I thought to myself, all right, I know we've talked about this before on the podcast, but I wasn't really sure why. I don't think we've ever done a Colin Farrell list.
I wish. Like, I want to now.
Yes. I feel like without looking at that list, this would be on it.
Not for me.
I don't think it would be high.
For you?
It might sneak on there.
Yeah. It wouldn't be on there for me. Just off the top of my head. It wouldn't be.
I know three.
Off the top of my head, I couldn't name my top five Colin Farrell movies.
I could name my top three, and then I'd have to think about it.
He's one of those that I think I would have to go through, and I would realize, like, oh, I like a lot more than I mean, obviously, no, I know my number one. My number one is obvious. I know that. But then beyond that, like,
I would say we could do a no, because that's gonna.
I don't
want to
waste it. I don't want to waste it. Exactly. He will be in another wide movie, and we'll do it then.
And we will not have a better idea that week. And we will do our five favorite Colin Farrell movies. But it wasn't that. So.
We never did Rachel Weisz. I just looked it up.
Okay. We did I mentioned it last week. We did love stories for dudes. I think I took that as to like love stories, quote unquote, that I like. But we did that back in 2013.
Like 13, yeah.
This movie came out 3 years after
that.
Yeah,
I think it would have been on, I think it was on your year-end list of 2016.
I think that's it. I don't see any other reason I would have talked about it other than I do like the movie. And it came out in 2016. I don't know what other list, other than maybe Colin Farrell, you're going to get it on.
Maybe it got brought up in a preview episode. I don't know when Killing of Sacred Deer came out. Maybe it got mentioned with
it probably did, that it's his follow-up. Lanthimos is a director that doesn't have an overly long filmography. We certainly have not done our five favorite Yorgos Lanthimos movies yet. He's got a couple Greek movies. He's got the Hotel movie. I'm going to butcher this, too. Kineta. Dogtooth, which did pick up an Oscar nom in 2011 for Best Foreign Language Film, and Alps before making his way over here with The Lobster, last year's follow-up, The Killing of a Sacred Deer, and The Favorite, which is the first time he's going to direct a movie that is not written by himself and Philippou, which I think is an interesting and probably a needed departure for him at this point.
Yeah, and... there's some directors that it's like, I want to see them either write for somebody else or direct somebody else's writing. Kevin Smith was like that for a long time. I wanted to see him write a script for somebody else. Wes Anderson is one that I've always thought,
that's the name
like,
I was going to bring up.
Very similar stylistically, I think. I feel like Wes Anderson's one of those that would benefit from directing somebody else's writing. And he's going to come up a lot more because I feel like style-wise and tone-wise and character-wise, there is a lot of Wes Anderson in Yorgos' stuff, especially this one. The Lobster is essentially three movies. The first movie is a little bit of a darker Wes Anderson movie without the bright colors.
Very dark, yeah.
There is very much a Wes Anderson feel in the first part of this movie.
Of the two Yorgos movies I have seen, I haven't seen Dogtooth, and that's kind of the most available over here. I think it's safe to say that they're not for everyone. Wes Anderson movies do have their own appeal, I guess. But I think that that appeals to a larger set of people than a Yorgos movie does, for sure.
Because they're fun. Wes Anderson's are quirky, but they're fun.
Right.
Yorgos is quirky, but they're dark.
Yeah, not so much fun. I mean, you hit the nail on the head is exactly why. But I think the thing that makes this movie dark, it's not the cinematography, it's the writing. And it's his writing specifically. You're either going to love that or you're going to hate it. By taking what could be divisive writing out of the equation, I think we're going to get a better example of, or a better idea of what he is as a director when he's not directing his own stuff.
Even if you look at the posters for Dogtooth, Alps, Killing of a Sacred Deer, and Lobster,
they all look the same.
They look like it's a four-part quadrilogy. They look like they're the same universe. And then now The Favorite is him branching out. You know, it's that fifth Coheed album.
Coheed, yeah, that's a band for me that I cannot stand. But people seem to like them, so fits in. You either love it or you don't. And it will be fascinating to see if this is a guy's two-time Oscar nominee, if he can have, maybe commercial's not the word, but at least mainstream success here in the States, or if he's going to continue to be this writer-director that nerds like me are going to talk about on shows like this because I'm the only guy that watches these movies.
He reminds me of, I hate making this comparison because I really, really hate these directors that are so niche that they're just making movies for their audience. Like, there's these directors that I hate, Harmony Korine and Todd Solondz, where they're making a movie for their audience and they have no interest in making a movie beyond that. Yorgos has a little bit of that, but I feel like he has more of that willingness to expand. And getting Colin Farrell in his first two English language films, I think, is huge. Getting Rachel Weisz, Colin Farrell did Lobster. Rachel Weisz did The Lobster. She's doing The Favorite with them. He's got Emma Stone in The Favorite. So he's got these actors and actresses that work with him. So he's doing something right. And I feel like he's more willing to expand and not just keep making, you know, The Lobster, Killing of a Sacred Deer, those movies aren't accessible. I think they hit a certain audience, and they're not interested in expanding beyond that.
I think you can play the same note like Wes Anderson's done for a long time if it's a happy note. People will want to come back to that because people will want to come back and laugh. I don't know how many people are want to continue to go back to the well of a Yargos movie knowing that they're going to get kicked in the nuts.
Because here's the thing with this movie. When it was on your list in the 2016, yeah. I remember saying, like, yeah, I like this movie. I enjoyed it the first watch. I just rewatched it again yesterday, and I'm glad I did because it's not a rewatchable movie. Killing of a Sacred
Deer. Once you know where it's going to go, you lose everything.
Yeah, Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Because you're not excited to get there.
Yeah, Killing of a Sacred Deer, it's dark. I watched it the once. I have no interest in ever watching it again.
You know where that one's going to
go,
too.
So he makes these movies that you watch them once, you absorb them. Not many people are going to want to go back to that well.
But I think that's okay.
But that's because of the turns. Yeah. And The Lobster, it's such a weird premise. The first movie of The Lobster is really, really good. And then the second movie has moments. It's a completely different tone. It's a completely different movie. And then it just gets dark. The whole thing has this dark tone.
Now you don't see what I don't see.
Yeah, now you don't breathe with your eyes.
I think you're right. I have not gone back to rewatch it, but I could see where it would lose a lot in that second viewing. Some movies get better when you rewatch them. Some movies, you don't ever need to see them again, and that's okay. I don't think it makes them...
That's not always a knock.
It doesn't make it a bad movie because I can't put it on like Ghostbusters.
Because I would say Hereditary. I think that's a great movie. I don't want to watch it again. I don't need
Better
to watch it again.
Better let that breathe for a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
But this one, seeing it for the first time, especially, like you say, that it is sort of broken into three distinct parts. It has three chapters. And that first chapter, I can certainly...
A lot of fun.
I mean, I kind of do sympathize with people that might watch this and feel like they are a drain on society because of their marital and, as it relates to that, their breeding status. I'm a mid-30s guy who's not married. I've made the decision to not have kids, and that does seem to dumbfound folks that have made the opposite decisions. And for most of my 34 years, I've also found myself not necessarily in any type of committed relationship. And I think as the older you get, the more off-putting that is to people that are shipped up. And I liked seeing that in this.
And I mean, even from me as a 30, as of yesterday, 30, or as of 3 weeks ago, like late 30s, like newly single, it was interesting to watch because there is that pressure because, you know, these people have 45 days to find love or it's over. And when you're thinking about possibly dating again in your late 30s, it's like, it's not just like, oh, here's, let's just have some fun. It's like, oh, I'm getting older. There's that pressure to where it's like, it's either be single the rest of my life or find somebody soon to spend the rest of my life with. There's that pressure to where I'm either going to crawl off and become a lobster and live for over 100 years self-sustaining, or I'm going to try to find love quick. And that leads to a lot of awkwardness. I like a lot of the awkward. Have you ever danced with somebody? Yeah. What kind of dance? Oh, it depends on the music. It just Nosebleed Girl. Nosebleed Girl is one of my favorites in this movie. Like, she's so good.
By taking that premise of turning people into animals, admittedly, that's a bit extreme to show how folks that are adjacent to me in their status are somehow subhuman. But it fits this dark humor. Wes Anderson has humor, and it's a little bit dark. This is pretty black. And there's some really tough things in here. Especially with David's lady friend and his brother. There's a scene there that it's awful. But you almost find yourself laughing at times that you're not entirely sure that you should be.
The very beginning, it follows a woman driving and she gets out of the car and she shoots a donkey. And it's hilarious. It shouldn't be. She walks up to three donkeys. She shoots one. And you don't see her again. She's not in the movie anymore. Like, that's her arc. And it's ridiculous.
I'm looking for the donkey. I found the donkey. I shot the donkey. Scene.
Now Colin Farrell. It's silly. There shouldn't be anything funny about shooting a donkey. There shouldn't be anything funny about watching your best friend walk away as a donkey. But just the first part when it's in the hotel, I think is a really compelling, interesting, fun movie.
Yeah, and you have some kind of quirky characters. John C. Reilly, to me, is playing a character that I've seen him do that before.
He's so good. Ben Whishaw, Paddington is good. Nosebleed Girl, again, and then the Heartless one. There's people that are good, and it's world building. We always talk about if you're going to go for it, you have to bring you in, and he goes for it. Like, he commits to this is the world now. To be in the city, you have to be a couple. You have to go through here. You have 45 days. You know, you have to prove it for 2 weeks, and then you have a yacht, and then you're in the city. If you don't make it, you become an animal. And it sucks you into that world. And Olivia Colman does great as the leader of, like, oh, you're losing a hand for a day to show you that everything's better with a second one. And he does a good job of building that world and kind of sucking you in and then kind of taking you out of it to go into this other world. And I feel like that's super ambitious that he's trying to build not just two worlds, but then he builds the city as well. There's a lot going on. But he does a decent job of it.
When we transition from the hotel to the survivor camp, not survivor camp, that's not really a good way, the single people camp, the militant single people, I do think that, to be fair, there are a lot of people that I don't need somebody to validate my existence. As many annoying people as there are about, like, oh, you should really find somebody, there's an equal amount of annoying people that are like, ah, oh, you don't need nobody, you do you. They're all fucking assholes. And I think he does a good job of showing that. And building that world, you do have a lot of people that seem like they have to inhabit. And it does seem very much like a Yargos world. He does things in a certain way. And all of his worlds are kind of the same. It does feel like they belong in the same movie if the transitions between worlds aren't as smooth as you'd like them to be, I guess.
Yeah, because even Sacred Deer, it's a different world, but he builds it. He does a good job sucking you in, and there's elements of this movie that I like. I like elements of all three stories. There's compelling stories that could have been told in the hotel. There's compelling stories that could have been told in the camp.
The hotel could have been an anthology movie. You know,
It could have been a series. If you drag this out over 10 episodes and you tell stories in the hotel, you tell stories in the survivor camp, and you tell stories in the city. I thought the city was fascinating. Walking by yourself, you get stopped by the cop. Where's your couple's card? Mm-hmm. And like, I thought there's a lot of cool stuff that he crammed so much in. The most we got to explore was the hotel, which I thought was the most compelling part because you got
they
to see it
the
most.
There,
And then the woods got dark, the combination of the woods and the city, you're going back and forth, and it's the escape movie times two. There's a lot about this movie to like, but that still doesn't make it a rewatchable movie. There's a lot to like. Thinking back on it that first time, if I wouldn't have rewatched it yesterday, I'd be glowing about, like, oh, the hotel is so good, and you see cool stuff in the city, but then watching it again, it's like, oh, yeah, it doesn't explore everything that you want it to.
I think it's a lot more fun to watch one time and then discuss with somebody else that's watched it once. Really just kind of the themes and the ideas of, like, all right, well, if you're just a single guy and you go into a department store, you're not going to get waited on because you basically don't exist unless you have that couple. Then, oh, well, they're here buying dishes or something. Then you become validated by having somebody else there. There's so many things like that in the movie that it's not subtle, which is okay. You don't have to outsmart the room every time you make a movie. But he had a lot of things to say, and I think you're right. It would have been cool as, like, a 10-episode limited, here's what I want to say, but I'm going to take my time. Instead of a two-hour movie, I guess we're going to milk 8 more hours out of it, but we can see...
I think there was plenty there for it,
though. We could see different examples of...
You could see people in the city. You could see people in the camp, people that have escaped the camp into the city. There's a lot there, and Colin Farrell is good. I mean, it's his movie. He carries it.
He's a fantastically interesting dude. If you think about it, early in his career, he was attractive guy in studio movies
like SWAT,
Daredevil, The Recruit, Phone Booth, Minority Report. We could go on and list them because he was headed down that career path and he wanted to cash checks doing that. God bless him for it. But then he started showing up in stuff like In Bruges, Seven Psychopaths, the McDonough movies, and he became a bit of an indie darling.
He's in Widows that comes out, I think, next week or this week. We could have done a Colin Farrell episode.
There will be another day. He'll be in something else again. And Widows isn't really his movie.
No, I can't wait for that movie, though.
Yeah.
I'm stoked for that.
For Colin Farrell to be in a Yargos movie, you really have to inhabit this character.
You have to buy into it.
You have to buy into it. You have to be the character that's on the page. he doesn't bring anything else to this character. He's a blank slate, and that's exactly what he needed to be. So many other actors, and you couldn't blame them for bringing a part of their own personality in. I think it's harder to not do that, and he really succeeds here.
He does, and so does Rachel Weisz. I think Rachel Weisz is incredibly charming, this sweet, very likable actress. In the last episode, I said it was, she was wasted, and that charm was wasted. But like as we talk about it, it was intentional.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that charm and that charisma of her was wasted, but on purpose. And even in Sacred Deer, it was Kidman as the wife, right? Like, he did it again. Like, he gets these actors, and he has them. You know, we talk about some actors that commit and turn it up to 11 and elevate everything they're in. He has them turn it down to zero, and lesser actors won't be able to do that. To tell Kidman or to tell Colin Farrell or Rachel Weisz or even Olivia Colman got some chance to play. I think she got to do some good stuff. But like to tell these really good actors to turn it to zero, you're flatlining
back
this whole
up,
movie.
Terry.
Yeah, for them to pull it off, it takes a special kind of actor to do that.
It does, and they have to do that because the star of these movies is not the actor, it's the writing.
It's the movie.
Which, to bring it back to The Favorite, now that's not the case. I've heard Coleman's really good in this movie. She plays Queen Anne, and this is a movie about her relationship with the Duchess of Marlborough.
She's way underrated. I think Olivia Coleman is just, maybe it's just an estates thing. I don't think she gets the love she gets over here. I don't know if she's as big as she should be over across the pond, but she's one of those that, again, like Stephen Lang, like Rose Byrne, she shows up and stuff. You know you've seen her, but you maybe don't pinpoint where you've seen her. She's really good in everything.
And it'll be interesting to see what his directing style is when he's not directing something that's so content-driven, so style-driven based on the writing. I want to see Emma Stone in this movie. It'd be a different experience seeing her in a quote-unquote Yorgos movie.
And that's the thing is with him doing something that's, because the star of his is his writing and the tone. And he sets this tone. And, you know, he's not this flashy visual director. He's not this bright, colorful, like he has a darkness to it. He doesn't play
grayness.
With grayness. Yeah, he doesn't play with bright colors like Wes Anderson. He doesn't do stuff with the camera like an Edgar Wright. He does some cool shots. The hallway stuff after she kills his brother, like, that's some cool stuff. But it's not
the biscuit girl just falling out of the sky.
Yeah, it's not flashy.
It's
but
a great
like,
shot.
Yeah, he does have very good shots. He's not flashy. So the star of his movies is the tone and the writing and this overall sense of dread almost. So I'm interested to see how that translates to somebody else's writing into a story that isn't necessarily this world-building, overcoming story of dread.
And I still think that there's, from what it sounds like, there's quite a bit of humor in The Favorite. I don't think it's going to be quite the gallows humor of the jokes with the heartless lady. He's a director that I'm interested in. At the very least, his shit's worth a watch. You may have to watch it by yourself, and you know, you may not be super enthused after you get done with it, but I like guys to do weird shit, and he's certainly doing some weird shit. We kind of promised, I don't think we promised, we said that we were leaving Halloween behind when we turned the calendar. And, well, our first week in November didn't go that well as far as leaving Halloween behind or horror behind. We took 2 weeks off.
Well, we got 28 weeks later in there.
Well, yeah, and Insidious. I had some horror movies on my Rose Byrne list, but that wasn't going to be horror-themed. This movie, I don't think is, The Lobster's not horror-themed, but the next couple weeks, we're going to be going back into a genre that we both like an awful lot. We're going to be doing our favorite possession movies next week, and then we're going to follow that up with a movie that it's tough because it's going to end up on our year-end list, so we're probably going to gloss over A Quiet Place by the time it comes to the end of the year, but I guess it's like the anti-It. We didn't talk about that as much as we should have in 2017, so we're going to rectify that with A Quiet Place this year. Give it
is
an episode in its year.
The Kieran and Shipka movie that is very similar to The Quiet Place to A Quiet Place comes out that week.
So yeah, the Sabrina movie place. Where she's also running from Stephen Lang type monsters. I don't know what it's called, but
Silence or something.
Something
like that.
Like that.
A silent area.
That's what we've got coming up for the rest of the month. A couple more horror-centric episodes, but hey, that's fine with us. And if we dig it, I'm sure you do too. So stick with us as we round out November and then we get into the holiday season, which December. Is award season around Movies on Up. We've got the Uppies coming up, our favorites of the year. We do some fun episodes in December, so I guess we're kind of trying to bridge the gap by doing another couple scary ones before we get back into our standard end of the year stuff. But come back and see us next week. But until then,
keep it up.